review the minutes. I will entertain a motion for the acceptance of the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
It's properly moved and second that the minutes be adopted. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? It's properly moved. The motion carries. So the minutes are adopted. What we will start with, and we will hope that the chair arrives at the time that we can move to the action items, but what we would like to have, Jack, is your team to present the financial report, so I will suggest that the committee turns to the financial report.
Yeah, just a couple of opening comments. We have four reports for you, two on the operating fund, two on the capital fund, and as we have committed, we are going to bring you quarterly reports to update both budgets, operating and capital. So we're going to start with the 06 closeout and status, and then we'll move into the first quarter on the 07, and Rick will walk us through it.
Good morning.
Morning.
Bear with me just a second while I catch up. Running slow, I got the flu. I think it's bird flu. I'm on to page 33 of 124 in the package. This is a look at last fiscal year, how the fiscal year closed out. We normally bring this to you in August, September time frame, but because of changes in meeting schedules and whatnot, we're bringing it to you now. The audit has been completed, so what we have here are final approved audited results, as opposed to what we would usually bring you, which would be pre-audit preliminary results. Fiscal 2006 ended the year with a budget surplus, albeit a small one. Looking at page 36 of 124, that table right there in the middle shows that revenues came in better than budget by about $38 million. However, expenses came in over budget by $35 million. You scroll that up just a little bit so everyone can see. And the bottom line was that subsidy had a surplus at year end of about $3 million. A number of variables contributed to all that. I want to touch on a couple of things. The last time we gave you a quarterly report, we were forecasting a year-end result of about $13 million. The actual result came in at $3 million, so there was about a $10 million variance. The single biggest issue there was basically a catch-up in an accounting process. There was just short of $5 million worth of Metro Access invoices that hadn't been processed in a timely fashion during the course of the year. And just doing trend-based forecasting and talking to some of the folks that were trying to get the new MV contract up, it was one of those things that was just missed. And as we went to close out the year, those prior payments, those prior invoices, were recognized properly in the accounting system, so the actual costs are the actual costs, but the forecast that I had made at the end of the third quarter wasn't assuming any of that. So that was almost half of the difference between what we forecast and what actually happened. The other $5 million is kind of cats and dogs things of just year-end, typical closeout things. There was what's called a bench stock adjustment, which is at the end of the year, we do kind of an around-the-company inventory of how many parts are at each workbench and those kind of things, and those things can swing a couple of million dollars one way or the other based on whether the actual inventory and what's the booked inventory are completely in sync. So they're basically technical accounting adjustments. All of this has already been through the external audit process. There were no issues, so I don't want anyone to believe there was any kind of an accounting problem. But the forecast that I made at third quarter didn't really catch those kind of things because it was a snafu in the processing of bills for the Metro Access service and just some technical things. Looking at ridership, we had a phenomenal year for ridership, and it's an important thing to pay attention to because when I flip over to the next quarterly report for fiscal 2007, we see some changes happening. What we had not done in the 06 budget is fully realize the growth potential that was going on out there. We hadn't factored in a lot of the off-peak servicing ridership increases. We hadn't factored in baseball. We hadn't factored in a whole slew of things. So the actual ridership kept coming in higher than budget, higher than budget, higher than budget. And as you remember, when we put the 07 budget to bed, we finally said, let's just accept that it's real and put it in there. So we cranked up the 07 revenue assumptions based on the 06 actuals. And I'll just leave that at that for right now and touch on it again when I get to the first quarter 07 result. But In summary, that's how the year ended. It kind of skimmed by on a $3 million budget surplus. At the December meeting, staff is going to make a recommendation that $3 million, rather than be refunded to the jurisdictions, be set aside in the existing operating reserve, because, as I keep saying when I get to the 07 first quarter result, we're seeing very difficult financial results coming at us right now. There's been a significant change happen in some of our ridership results, and we're very concerned about being able to meet the 07 budget that is in place. So it's just for consideration right now. We'll be asking for your approval to set that $3 million aside in the reserve at the December meeting. Any questions on 06?
I have some questions, but I'll hold them.
You can hold them?
Okay, let me jump ahead to 07 first quarter, which... Yeah, I'm going to do the operating side first, and then I'll go back and do the capital pieces. So let's see if we can get to page 78 of 124.
Excuse me, I have one question. Before you go to 07, we had a discussion in previous meetings, budget meeting, in terms of capturing revenues at the point in which tickets are purchased versus what I think we had did previously.
Yes.
And have we made adjustments for that?
No, we haven't. We wanted to wait until the external audit was finished. That's now been completed. We believe we can increase what's called the recognition of deferred revenue,
right,
and we want that to be part of the budget discussion that we bring to you next month. It's a policy decision. And it's one of the things that could be used to mitigate some of the problems that we anticipate in 07.
Okay. So we're not presenting that as our budget as of now. It's going to be a policy decision that will come before us, and then we'll make a decision. And from that point on, will we
realize
that?
Yes.
You have any sense of have you done any analysis that will suggest what we will capture?
What Kathy Smith, our comptroller, told me yesterday was, we believe we could, without any risk at all, take revenue up about $8 million by just recognizing more of that deferred revenue instantly. Beyond that, it begins to just depend on the analysis that we want to do. So there's an immediate $8 million revenue gain to be had by just changing the revenue recognition policy.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, looking now at the first quarter fiscal 2007 operating budget result, I want to draw your attention, Janet, please scroll up so we can see that table on that page. Something we haven't seen in quite a while. Revenues have come in under budget, and it is almost entirely being driven by Metro Rail passenger revenues. Something unusual is happening in the economy, and we haven't quite got our fingers on it yet. But the growth has slowed down. Metro Rail is still growing, but it's not growing at the rate that it was growing through the prior couple of fiscal years. This budget anticipated that it would continue growing at that rate. So for the first quarter, I think we've got growth of about 0.4%. The budget was assuming 3 or 4% growth. We are watching very carefully to see what factors are driving this. It seems to be occurring mostly in the off-peak and in the discretionary time periods. One of the things that we're noticing is that rail ridership for baseball games is a lot less than last year.
I would ask the indulgence of the members, that this is a very significant point here that the gentleman is explaining, and I think it's very important that we understand this, because this could have some significant budget implications as we go through the 07 budget. So would you go through that again?
Mr. Chairman? Also, as you're asking me to do that, I think one of the questions is, how much are you going to infer from one quarter's information, and whether we want to re-extrapolate from that?
That's probably the most important question, and we just want to highlight this right now. I'm not convinced it's a trend. We have to wait and see. If it truly is something like baseball-related, as soon as the baseball season ended, we should get back to some kind of normal growth level. So what we're highlighting here is that during the first quarter, something happened very different than what we anticipated, and it could be as much as just baseball. It could also be the fact that gasoline prices have come down pretty dramatically. We're not seeing the loss of ridership so much in the core AM and PM periods as we are midday and weekends, which are the discretionary periods.
You just said loss of riders. Now, is it loss of riders or?
Loss against what we'd assumed in the growth rate.
So just to be clear.
To be clear, Metro Rail is continuing to grow.
Yes. Reduction in the rate of growth.
Right.
Reduction in the rate of growth.
Right. Metro Rail is growing. It's just not growing as fast as we had anticipated. But Mr. Zimmerman's point is correct. This is just a quick snapshot of first quarter results. It doesn't indicate that there's a trend out there. If it turns into a trend, to Mr. the Chairman's point, this could be a significant budgetary issue. This is something that we just want to draw your attention to, and as
sure.
we come back with updates, it'll either be something that mitigates at the end of the first quarter, or it's something that begins to cause very serious budgetary problems. The good news on the expense side, we're about 2% under budget at the end of the first quarter, so we still have a budget surplus at the end of the first quarter, but it's kind of a razor thin result at this point. So any other questions on the operating results?
Questions?
What have we done with the diesel fuel? If you're saying people aren't riding because of maybe fuel prices went down, I guess that reduction of fuel prices going down helped us on the expense side, right?
Well, it did help us. We've swapped virtually all of our diesel fuel. We buy about 13 million gallons. We've swapped about 12. We always leave a little cushion there, and we did it, I believe, in a series of 14 different transactions, and the idea was cost averaging, just like you might do in an investment or something like that. So the bad news is we exceeded budget by about $900,000. The good news is we originally thought we might go by $3 to $5 million. So it did assist us. It's now a known quantity, and it's $900,000 and change over the budget, but we're locked up for the rest of the year. And as you recall, we ask you to approve a resolution, so we might consider swapping for 08. So prices are looking good right now, and we may move forward with that. So when the 08 budget comes out, we'll have a portion of that locked up as well, I would anticipate.
Further questions?
I'll go back to my question if you're...
Sure.
My question was on the adjustment in the Metro Access expense. Explain that a little bit. How did we go for so long not knowing that this expense was present?
It was a period of about 4 or 5 months toward the back end of the fiscal year. Metro Access expense had been consistently coming in under budget during the first half of the year, and I met with the folks running the program and was repeatedly assured that that trend would continue through year end. And I honestly think what happened is just in all the rush, once we converted to MV, to improve the quality of service and focus on the customers, the record keeping process took a back seat. And I understand it's just a focus of what's more important. And the focus was on getting the service improved. And as that took place and as we approached the year end, then there was more time to look at the record keeping. And that's when we realized that there were invoices being paid, the paperwork hadn't been processed through the accounting system, my forecast had not captured that. So at year end, when Kathy Smith was preparing for the final audit, she caught this, and we booked the expense, and that was about a $4 to $5 million difference between my forecast and what actually happened.
You have to admit it's pretty dramatic to go from what we think is a $13 million surplus to a $3 million surplus.
Yes, ma'am.
So, I mean, and all in 1 month, sort of. I mean, if it were declining over time, you could understand that.
I wasn't real happy.
So what, and what accounted for the other $5 million?
Part of it was an inventory adjustment. Part of it was recognition of labor expense that should have hit in a prior year but was held in suspense pending some analysis of a funding source. If you wish, I can get you a detailed explanation.
No, I didn't want a detail. I just want to make the point that, you know, $10 million in adjustments for, you know, accurate accounting is fairly significant. And, you know, if we hadn't had a $13 million proposed surplus, that could have been a real problem.
I absolutely
so
agree with you.
I'm not very happy about that. I hope that whatever the issues were that led to this, they're being addressed. And, for example, if that occurred now, with our concern about the revenue estimates, it puts us in a very precarious position, so.
We have worked with those folks. I mean, this is clearly something that shouldn't have happened. It should be a concern. It's a concern to me because we can't accurately forecast the budget and tell you what's going on if the accounting records aren't up to date, and they simply weren't up to date when we did that forecast. We've met with the people who didn't keep them up to date, and we are up to date, and we will be up to date. But I agree, it's a concern. You shouldn't fluctuate $10 million in the fourth quarter.
Absolutely not, because, okay, we'd already been spending that money on something else, you know. So,
that's right.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Solomon.
Is there any provision in their contract, MV's contract, that would penalize them for this type of accounting error so that we won't get
it? Was our error.
It's not their error. It's our
error.
Oh, okay. All right.
Sorry.
And without getting specific, staffing changes have been made.
Okay.
So I don't think it'll repeat.
Further questions?
You don't foresee any more? And everything, all the bills have been paid for MV?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we're all caught up. Everything seems to be right on budget right now.
Okay. Next item,
Jeff? Rick, just before you continue, can we speak to the positive side of the ridership on the bus side? Just to
yeah, I'm sorry, Jack.
Take a deep breath.
Yeah, not performance review time yet.
Now it's that we've had the liverwurst, can we have the dessert?
It's that bird flu thing, you know. Throughout last year, we saw phenomenal gains in bus ridership. And we kept seeing it happen over and over again, and we kept saying, this can't be right. It's got to be a problem with the data or something. And it turned out to be true, and not only true, it's sustaining. The bus ridership in 07 is different than the rail ridership, and that's one of the most remarkable things that we're seeing is that bus ridership is continuing to grow at a healthy 2 to 3% rate. So that's why we're hoping that what has happened on the rail side is just a blip, an anomaly, a one-time kind of thing, because certainly the bus ridership is continuing to be very positively received by the region.
Mr. Chairman?
One question. Can I ask some questions? One question, but I will acknowledge you, because I wanted to follow up with that comment. Obviously, have we been able to track where that ridership is, where the increases are, so we can maybe get a sense of analysis of, is there anything that we're doing out there differently in different routes that's generating that, or are there different routes where the ridership is increasing at significantly higher levels?
Yeah, Jim Hughes actually can stratify the entire bus system by various planning terminology I dare not use, but
we're preparing something that we present to everybody. The ridership on bus is growing across the region. It's not growing in one area different faster than the other. It's pretty consistent. And we're seeing a pretty consistent growth on our big lines, too. So it's not just something where a new development will show up. We've seen some of that. Across the region and across every route, as well as you can see a 2% growth on the X2 line, which is our heaviest line of a lot of people. You might see a 3 or 4% line on a route that's carrying 400 or 500 people a day. That, in my opinion, is just an anomaly of the numbers. The growth is all across the region. We're now looking at it by time of day, is it rush hour, is it off peak? So we're in the middle of this, but our first brush about where it is kind of all over the place.
Well, I think all of us would be interested in that data. In fact, we're leading up to our bus summit at the end of this month, and it would be great to have that information with some analysis so we get a sense of, you know, what's going on there.
I'd like to just add, I mean, over the last year with the board's support, we've replaced one-third of the fleet with brand-new buses in Virginia and Maryland, and, you know, they're much more reliable than the older buses that we replaced. We've got air conditioning, we have heat, and improved reliability, good destination signs. I'd like to think that's a major part of people being attracted to the bus system.
Thank you. Mr. Zimmerman, we're glad to have you come back with such a overwhelming support for your work and your efforts. So I just want to acknowledge that, and I'll now recognize you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Recco was just highlighting what I wanted to point to, because I think, you know, all of us feel like there's a lot of work to be done to really bring bus service up to its potential. But we've started that work, and over the last few years, a number of things have been done that have made noticeable improvements. Mr. Requa identified perhaps the most significant, which is the vehicles themselves. People can see that on the street. I know, from having been out there the last few months, listening to a lot of people, that they have been taking note of that, and I have to think that that is at least part of it. Some of it is clearly an overall trend to using transit more, but this kind of shows the potential we have to capture more of that desire by making improvements to service. And I think that, and again, maybe when we get more analysis, we'll be able to get a better sense of, you know, is there any pattern in there that's a little more subtle, but that can be found. But, you know, we have made improvements on a number of lines, and those lines, certainly some of which I'm familiar with, have, you know, shown tremendous ridership. Certainly, Columbia Pike and the 16 line, you've seen that for 3 years now. The rec service that Mr. Coffin spearheaded down on Route 1. I'm watching the 9S service that only just started this year, and I stood there in Crystal Drive and watched the bus go by full of people. You know, so some of it is restructuring the service, I think, may contribute, but clearly the fact that we've got a better fleet out there, you know, that it looks better because it's newer, it is in fact cleaner, and it is more and more is low floor buses, and I think just generally giving people a better level of service. I think we're starting to see that. I also believe, though, that if we take some of the bolder steps that we've been discussing at the bus conference, that there's really a great potential to tremendously grow bus service, perhaps more in the short to medium term than we can even do on the rail service, given the physical limits we have there.
Great. Further comments?
I want to just comment on the report. You know, it used to be that we got monthly reports, and they gave us some sense of the little bit more analysis of the ridership on a monthly basis than we have in this report. And I was a little bit skeptical when we moved away from that. I do understand why we are getting financial reports on a quarterly basis. I mean, I guess, you know, a quarter is more of a, gives you more of an opportunity to trend. But I must tell you, I miss those monthly reports on the ridership and the comparisons with the month before. And I just kind of, you know, had a better, I had a better feel for the dynamics of that. So
we still do the analysis monthly. I mean, all the monthly report is still, the information's here. We still do the same stuff. I mean, I guess we could bring
it to
you.
We do it in that, at least that little summary of activity in the same fashion that we used to do it, and give that to us.
Yeah. I see no reason we can't.
Okay.
Bring it like an encapsulated monthly report.
Encapsulate, and if we need to expand that, we're happy to do that.
Yeah, that would be very helpful to me.
Yeah, it's no extra work because we have
a recommendation.
Yes, that's a recommendation. And I hear it being accepted, so. Okay. We could get that on a monthly basis. That doesn't really disturb your financial
data. No, that's fine.
That's
no trouble at all.
That would be helpful. Okay.
Further question, comments?
Just, Mr. Chairman, briefly echoing what Mr. Zimmerman had to say. When we look at the Metro-provided contract service for the Route 1 corridor, the REC service, we have the newer buses now. And instead of, you know, unlike your father's bus service, this bus service treats people as customers with some demands, as opposed to looking at it as a transit-dependent corridor. We're looking at it as an opportunity to generate more customers, and it's working. The bus service is reliable. We have better skip-stop service. We're more effectively linking the buses to the rail, the timing of getting the two to come together, and folks are freely choosing to take that bus service now who might have other choices. So again, it required some investment, but it is working.
I agree totally. Thank you.
Well, I think all the comments just speak to one at the we got some investments that we've made, but I think it also speaks to an analysis so that we can also get a real good sense of what's in, what you know, I understand the comments that both the gentlemen made in terms of our investments, but I think it's also just across the board, we need to get a sense of what's driving those increases so we can even ascertain how much of that is coming from the investments, how much that's doing to growth. But I think going into the bus summit, we have some options, and we've had some great examples of some things that we want to look at as not just something that's unique in our system, but something that's throughout our system. So I think that's a great opportunity for us going forward.
Well, it will be a good opportunity, as Mr. Hughes says, agreeing with you that the ridership is across the board, and certainly the investments have helped, and I think the innovative things that we're going to talk about on the 30th will hopefully only spur us on further with better ridership and better cooperation within the region.
Great.
Thank you. Mr. Lynn, I apologize for jumping around the agenda, but I wanted to hold the two operating reports together because of the crossover from 06 to 07. What I'd like to do now is talk about the two capital reports, which were items 4B and 4D.
Okay.
Looking at that's item
I'm
4.
I'm here, Mr. Linton. Yes. I'm here now.
I understand that, sir. I was just trying to go through this part of the agenda.
I'd like to actually move to the action items, if you don't mind.
Well, we were holding those, sir,
right,
for you until you arrived.
We're here.
Okay.
Now. So let me move, if I may.
Absolutely, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Linton, for pitching in here. But I'd like to move to the action items,
okay,
if we can.
Okay, yeah. Deputy Chief Shaw will make the presentation.
Do you want to do it? Is it necessary to do the discussion if you wanted to first?
You don't want to do
it. No, I mean, I think we should hold it all in a...
Okay, yeah.
Just one second. We have one of our board members has asked for the opportunity to comment on a possible deferral of this matter. And I'm going to let him speak to that issue.
Yes,
and then we can determine what to do. Mr. Solomon.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're talking about the Metro Transit Police firearms training range. A couple of months ago, I had a conversation with staff about whether or not it was feasible to put a fire range in Prince George's County at the location of Branch Avenue. And my comment was that we should do some outreach to, one, the council member, Marilyn Bland, to the county executive staff, and to the community. Now, I have not been made aware of any of those meetings. I certainly haven't been invited to any of those meetings. And until that outreach effort is done, I would ask that this matter be deferred until the council member is contacted and get her input, until Mr. Johnson's office and his staff is contacted and get his input, and to get the feel of the community as to whether or not they object or support that range in that area. And until that happens, then I would ask that this committee defer this matter until a future date.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Solomon. I do want to add to that because, like I'm sure every other member of this board and committee, you know, I read the Washington Post article, and there was concern about noise, you know, and I know that Chief Hansen made a comment that was quoted in the Post concerning that matter, but that certainly reinforces my inclination to agree with you. And so may we interpret what you're saying as a motion?
Yes, I would move to defer this matter until a future date, until the community outreach is properly done, until the meetings occurred. I'm made aware of those meetings, invited to participate, and the council member Bland, County Executive Johnson, and the community weigh in on whether or not that is a suitable location for a fire wing.
Okay, it's been moved. Is there a second?
A second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there further discussion on the motion to defer this matter? Mr. Kaufman.
I would just briefly like to hear from Chief Hansen if there's any impact on deferral.
I'm sorry, Mr. Kaufman.
Would there be any impact on this deferral? What are, by not acting, what does that entail?
The quicker we could have moved on this, the quicker we would have been assured that we would have a facility to send our folks to qualify annually as required. So once again, we'll be reliant on the kindness of our local law enforcement colleagues, but it's been a real challenge trying to obtain time from ranges in the region who, like Prince George's County and Loudoun County, are hiring, and Montgomery County's refurbishing and other ranges have their own issues. So it'll be a challenge, but of course we're here to serve the wishes of the board, and we will expedite the outreach to the members that Mr. Solomon indicated he wanted us to touch base with.
Thank you.
Mr. Linton?
Well, I was going to have some other questions and issues with this matter, so I would support Mr. Solomon's motion. One of the basic questions I had, since we're talking about building a facility, is why this was operating
proposal versus capital. Since we are going to be structuring building, the proposal is to build a facility, and it seems to me that the most appropriate expenditure of money for that is capital items.
Yeah, if I could, I'd like to address that and maybe take that off the issue, off the table as an issue, because I've had like 125 different people ask me the same question. And it could be in the capital budget, but it doesn't have to be. This is kind of a different animal than what we're used to around here. We've set it, we've tried to set it aside in what we call the reimbursable operating budget, which is kind of a holding pen for oddball projects and things that come along. The precedent for this was years ago we ran bus service through PRTC out in Virginia, and when we won that contract we had some capital costs up front to do some refurbishment of the garage where the service was going to come out of, and then it eventually converted over to operating. And we found that mechanism in our kind of budgeting and accounting systems to be the least amount of administrative hassle. It's just kind of a technocrat issue. It's just the easiest way to administer this thing. It could wind up in the CIP. It just winds up creating more paperwork. So what I was trying to do is separate the policy question of should we, shouldn't we have a range from the technocrat issue of what column in a spreadsheet does this thing show up in. And if instructed to, we can put it in the capital budget. It just generates more work upstairs in this building and administrative processes.
I have never heard the suggestion that we use operating or capital as because of increased paperwork. It seems to me that it is a building of an asset that is going to be in place that depreciates over periods of time, and that we were always called for some long-term dollars that will be used.
It will absolutely be run.
It seems to me that that constitutes a capital item.
It will absolutely be run through the fixed asset system. This kind of goes to the nuts and bolts of this PeopleSoft financial system that we own.
Well, let me intervene at this point, because mm-hmm. I think we're drifting off the motion. And you know, I think it's very important to consolidate this discussion so that if we're going to defer it at the time when it comes back before us, we can have the full discussion, rather than having a piece of it now and a piece of it later. And also the discussion should be relevant to the motion, and the motion is to defer. Is that okay with you, Mr.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I can finish, and I'll allow you to do that, I would want to give the staff, since they're going to be doing some additional work, I wanted them this to be conveyed so that when the matter does come back in front of us, that this issue can be clarified as well.
Sure.
Since we're going to delay the action, it would seem to me that we want to expedite a product that we can move once it comes back in front of us after the hearing takes place in Prince George's County. So that's why I was trying to get this off the table and into a position where they could take some changes.
Well, but let me just say that I also have questions, which I am not going to ask, because there are various questions regarding this proposal. And I've seen this happen here where we kind of do a piece of it and then we're told, well, you've already resolved that piece. And I'd rather keep all this issue together. And, of course, that's in keeping with our rules. Mr. Deegan, on the motion to defer.
Mr. Graham, I'd like to hear the presentation. We can always defer it afterward. I mean, we haven't even heard the presentation, and we're deferring the item.
Right. Well, the motion has been
made. You might have more questions after you're here.
All right. And the motion has been made. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? All those in favor of the motion by Mr. Solomon, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. The ayes have it. This matter is deferred. And we proceed to our second action item, which is to amend the FY07 paratransit budget. Mr. Yaffe.
Yeah, I think we could have killed this motion.
Pardon me?
What? Yeah.
Well, I think we have had a motion.
Well, there's a we have motion to reconsider, Mr. Chairman.
Well, did you vote on the prevailing side?
Yes.
You voted on the prevailing
side? Yes.
Side?
So I make a motion to reconsider.
Okay, it's been moved to reconsider. Is there a second?
Second.
Did you vote on the prevailing
yes.
side? You did not vote no on the prior
no.
motion.
Was the vote recorded, sir? Did you get an opportunity for the vote?
We're now on the motion to reconsider. Is there discussion on the motion to reconsider? Discussion? All those in favor of reconsidering, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The noes have it. The motion fails.
Roll call.
Okay. Right, now we have to straighten out who's voting and who's
not voting. That's why I like to hear that.
I have, Mr. Graham has a vote, Mr. Linton has a vote.
Solomon has a vote.
Ms. Mack has a vote, Mr. Deegan has a vote, Mr. Zimmerman has a vote, Mr. Kaufman has a vote, Mr. Solomon has a vote. So, there we go. Linton, how do you vote?
What's the motion?
On the motion to reconsider. It's your motion.
Yes.
Okay. Mrs. Mack?
No.
Mr. Deegan?
Yes.
Mr. Zimmerman?
Yes.
Mr. Kaufman?
Aye.
Mr. Solomon?
No.
Mr. Graham votes no. So the vote is 4 in favor, 3 opposed. We have reconsidered the motion to defer. Discussion is now on the motion to defer. Discussion is now on the motion to defer.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Zimmerman.
I think perhaps the difficulty here is not the question of deferral, but the desire by some members to get the questions on the table before the motion is actually deferred to facilitate a better conclusion in the end. I would suggest that before we retake the motion to defer, we might want to consider having some presentation and the opportunity for some members to put those questions on the table, and then the sentiment might be to go ahead and defer in the end. In any case.
Mrs. Mack.
I think that it would be appropriate for those members who do have questions to make sure that management gets those questions during the deferral period so that they can be considered before the matter comes back to us. For example, the issue that we were discussing, the one about the capital versus the operating, I think the answer that we got was probably not a good answer. It spoke to the process rather than to the objective. And it seems to me that since this is a reimbursable project, it seems to me that the recommendation goes to how to really facilitate the reimbursable project. I have questions about the cost, if it were operating or if it were capital. But I think those questions can be reviewed while we're going through the outreach process, and they would just be more relevant at the time the entire matter is being discussed. So I think it would be much more efficient if we would raise our questions to management, and then bring the entire issue back to us at one time.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Solomon.
Yeah, well, thank you. The presentation, I'm not objecting to the action item as an action item. I am objecting to it being heard and voted on today because of the lack of community outreach, because to my knowledge, the county executive office wasn't contacted and their input wasn't solicited with respect to this item because council member Marilyn Bland wasn't contacted in her views. The community wasn't contacted. So we would like that outreach effort to go forward and get the community input. The community may say they don't want it there. And if it would being proposed for Arlington County or Montgomery County or any of the jurisdictions sitting at this table, I think it would like the opportunity to have input on whether or not it's suitable for that location. And that's what all I'm asking. Get that input and then come back and then we'll determine whether or not it should go forward. Having this discussion and doing it for 15 or 20 minutes today when we can do it whenever that input comes back seems to be more appropriate than having it today. And that's all I'm asking.
Well, I think if I may add, you know, I'm concerned about how the proposal might change, because the whole point of community input is to have a meaningful process. And it's not just a stop that we have to make on the way to our decision. And so we may end up discussing, perhaps at length today, issues that are no longer on the table. And there will be other issues that we will discuss today that we'll have to discuss again when it comes back.
Hold those comments, Mr. Chairman.
Well,
I like those. I'm going to use them another point. and remind you of them. I agree.
Are you interrupting my presentation?
No, I would never do that.
Because I'd like to finish my comments, if you don't mind.
I would like you to do that.
I know you have great enthusiasm for your point of view.
I have enthusiasm for yours. I'm actually supporting it.
But do you mind if I finish my comment?
Please do.
And so it makes sense to me to simply say we want to discuss this whole issue. It's a very important issue to Prince George's County. It's a very important issue to public safety at Metro WMATA. We can have this discussion, and I'd rather see it done in a very efficient way. That's my point of view. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? Further discussion, Mr.
Yes.
Deegan?
I'd like to call your attention to the alternatives in the presentation that we have yet to hear. You know, this could cost this authority up to another $500,000 in extra overtime paid to send these people to Cheltenham. We risk not having officers being able to carry firearms. You know, I think in today's world, we want to have more police officers in our system. And to hear the presentation, to find out what we're going to do, whether we're going to have a firing range or not, you're going to need one. And not to even want to hear it, I just don't understand. You know, you can delay, but you end up paying for it in the end anyway.
Further discussion, and are we prepared to vote? Although this is on the motion, Mr. Solomon's motion, as reconsidered, to defer this matter until there's community input from those directly affected. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? No.
No.
The ayes have it. The motion is carried. We now proceed to the paratransit budget. Mr. Yaffe or Mr. Requa, are you presenting this?
No, Mr. Yaffe is going to Mr. Chairman, but I'd like to make a couple comments. I mean, yes. I think we all know that we've been through a process of transitioning from one contractor to another, that we've had concerns expressed by the public, that we've had involvement with the elderly and disabled community through our committee, through the RAC committee, and we've got a lot of input and concerns and questions that have been raised. And Mr. Yaffe's presentation today is to try to address some of those items, and try to make some improvements in establishing partnerships with the community and diverting some of our Metro Access patrons to other services, right-sizing the fleet, improving maintenance, improving management. And I want to just raise the point that there are some expenses to this proposal, and that there are funds that are available from the job access reverse commute. And I know the comment of found money, but I'd like to suggest this is not found money, that when the joint access and job access and reverse commute program began, Metro was a recipient of funds. We worked with the community in the 50-50 sharing of those funds to provide different services throughout the region. And as budgets tightened, the matching 50% money went away, and actually we were still receiving JARC money and really did not have a use for it. And through the efforts of knowing that the Metro Access budget was increasing over the years, and our desire was, it seemed to be sense to use these funds, if at all possible, towards improvements in Metro Access and helping offset the subsidy. So through legislative actions, we've been able to receive authority to use past JARC funds, Job Access Reverse Commute funds, towards improving and subsidizing the Metro Access program. So Mr. Yaffe will be speaking about a $6 million source of funding for this program. It is past Job Access Reverse Commute funds, and they are funds that can only be used for Metro Access at this time. So with that, I'll turn it over to Steve and let him make the presentation.
Thank you. It's an opportunity to enable us to respond to needs identified by the ad hoc committee, previous studies on Metro Access, and the disability communities. We have met with the Elderly and Disabled Committee, Metro Access Subcommittee, there for the full committee twice. We've met with representatives from the Centers for Independent Living in the area, the ad hoc committee, the RAC, representatives from ADAPT, which was an organization that whose efforts led to the ADA, Northern Virginia Disability Advocates, and local AARP volunteers. most of these funds will allow us to have more, we need more vehicles. With these funds, we'll be able to have operational spares, which we don't have now, to address service interruptions and delays. We'll be able to enhance our personnel and our technology to oversee contractor performance. I really want to highlight that we'll be able to create community transportation partnerships to meet needs that bus and rail cannot meet for some individuals, but in a more attractive and an efficient manner than Metro Access. And as part of that, we will work towards and come back to you again to transform eligibility into a process that educates and enables people to use transit and other mobility options. So we're very grateful for this opportunity. And on the first slide, the top recommendation, door-to-door service, was recommended by the ad hoc committee. It was analyzed by our consultant, which we were directed to hire, to analyze those ad hoc recommendations, which required some expenditures. They have looked at door-to-door. They have identified that there will be expenditures in the transition process. We expect to spend $100,000 in to explain how it'll work to our customers. We will also have some operating expenses for the first 4 to 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, to as part of the transition process. Because whenever you make a change, it will have some operational repercussions. And once we have the new vehicles, we will have an extra board capacity, and we'll be using that during the initial transition. Once we are in door-to-door, as the ad hoc consultant identified, the impact on operating funds expenditures will be negligible. We will be going from a 10-minute wait time to a 5-minute wait time. The driver will escort people from the building entrance for individuals whose door building entrances are visible from the vehicle. We'll extend it in the drop-off. But it works out, it breaks even. Door-to-door service will enable us to reduce our complaints, to reduce our mistakes, to reduce the number of missed trips, reduce the number of late trips. It'll help us operationally. About half the ADA properties around the country are already door-to-door. 67 vehicles, again, we don't have enough spares for maintenance, much less operating. We'll waive the MV's productivity requirement through June of 2007. As we retool their scheduling capability to more efficiently use the software that they have, to use it more analytically so that we can group rides. We would spend $375,000 on a website, basically. Every forum I've been in, both at Fairfax and then here, has had the same one recommendation in common, well, actually several, but one recommendation in common was we need a one-source information center on paratransit services, Metro Access, FASTRAN, WETS, all the resources that are out there because people don't know about them. Once we have this clearinghouse, then in the future we will work with senior centers, libraries, volunteer organizations, language-based organizations to train people at those sites to introduce folks who don't speak computer to the information that's on that website. We'd incorporate it in the eligibility process so that people know what other options they have, of course, transit being primary. And then the last item there is cashless payment for Metro Access customers and Human Service Agency billing. 12% of our rides, Maryland mostly, also D.C., not so much Virginia. Actually, none in Virginia, as far as I know, of our agency, Human Service Agency clients, many of whom can't handle fares. We are looking at some of these funds, $82,000, I think, would be updating Metro Access ridership and demand projections with particular attention to seniors. The number of folks 75 and over will double by 2030. The rate of disability increases with age slowly, but a little quicker once you're past 75 years of age. We would, some of our partners, we would like to use during peak periods as well. There's not enough capacity that they have during peak periods to transport Human Service Agency clients, so we are looking at 16 larger vehicles that they would operate using their CDL drivers. We would like to, $50,000 is in here for working with, hopefully, it could be D.C. initially, but eventually we'd spread it out to the region, transferring Medicaid clients who are currently using paratransit to fixed route transit. Give them a smart card, identify how many rides they'd need for medical purposes, double it, not on our bill, but the Medicaid agency's bill. Get them transfer those who can use fixed route to fixed route. And with the smart cards, they would be able to use it for other things, load money for groceries and so on. The primary partnership purpose would be to bring grocery trips, discretionary off-peak trips, into larger groups on vehicles that we don't operate, to go to Target, to go to Shoppers, to go to Giant. Again, larger capacity vehicles is something that some of the jurisdictions already do with their own vehicles, but we've already identified 17 groups in D.C. alone, average of 7 Metro Access people apiece. Right now, they are booking their own rides. Our productivity is not something I like to brag about. The cost per ride is $36.85 a ride for FY06. We can get this down to $8 per ride, give or take, by having them on partnership vehicles. And then we can go further. By identifying Metro partners to operate the vehicles, we can, and there's a logo in your package, we can take that to Target and ask them, since we're coming there, can you help us fund these vehicles? There's a slide that's pretty illegible that we had from the Northern Virginia Transportation Study, focusing on seniors 75 and up. Do you have trouble reaching? One-third of non-drivers and 15% of those who are still driving said clothes and household items. And again, it looks like a bar graph that's hard to read, but to me it looks like a red bullseye. We can go to Walmart, Kmart, and these partners and get some help. And again, we want to work towards revising the Metro Access eligibility process to mainstream those who can use transit to use transit, because transit is same-day service. That for those who can't use transit for some trips, perhaps they can use some of these community transportation partnerships we'll establish, or some that already exist in the local communities. Make it a more educational and enabling process. Link them to travel training. Inventory the impediments that lie between their homes and the bus stop, because it may be a curb cut here or there that's a problem, or widening a sidewalk, and then eventually work with the localities to see to prioritizing funds. Let me go to the next slide, please. We want to manage our resources. We have MV is our major contractor. They have 3 sites. 2 of them already have above ground fuel tanks. The third site may be relocated, and hopefully that's in the future. But we also have 4 contractors, 2 MV, operating Metro Access vehicles that are paying retail. They're going to Shell or Chevron for their gas. If we have these vendors join Community Transportation Association of America, that's $6,000, it's not much. But through that, they can also bulk purchase through Mansfield Oil, which several of us already use, get the price of fuel down. Once the cost of those 4 above ground tanks is amortized, that'll be 10 months, we'll save $345,000 a year. You've already heard a report been distributed in August from a summary of that from Trans Systems, identifying areas that we should look at to be more stringent in overseeing contractor performance. We would like to bring that same vendor back to tell us how, give us protocols by which we should be by which we should enhance our oversight. We want to look at, again, this is one we'd have to come back to the board, eventually perhaps zoning Metro Access service. In New York, if you travel from the Bronx to Queens, you have to transfer, because on bus you'd have to transfer. San Diego, from La Jolla to downtown, you'd have to transfer, same reason. Chicagoland, if you cross Lake Cook Road, you have to transfer. We may want to transition to zone service. Our drivers would be more familiar with the quadrant instead of the whole service area. It would just help us operationally. again, that's not an, that's a long-term project. We need some technology enhancements. We already mentioned cashless fare. We need some more ability to pull data, a little bit of money for trapeze. And then our vehicle preventive maintenance schedule is currently every 6,000 miles. If we're going to keep these vehicles 5 years, which was envisioned in the contract, we're going to have to do better. Can we go to the next slide, please? Or is that the last one? I forgot. Oh, okay. If we learn how to educate our consumers in their opportunities, I believe that, and manage our resources better, and we're already talking with MV on redoing the scheduling process so that we can group rides that stay on Metro Access more intelligently to get our productivity up. We can address the, our demand is increasing. 6.25% weekday ridership from May to September, a similar proportion apparently, I'm hearing, from September to November, and it's just gonna hit us. We've gotta manage our resources and our services more carefully. And this is a one-time opportunity to give us the, what we need to do that. And I'm certainly glad to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Yaffe. And we really appreciate all the progress that is being made, you know, on this program. And we see that there are very significant opportunities available to us through this funding. And that's very much appreciated. I do, however, this is the Budget Committee, and I do have a couple of budget-related questions that I would like to ask. The resolution indicates that this $6.1 million of, quote, previously appropriated federal job access and reverse commute grant program funds are available. Can you explain to us just how this availability occurred, and was there no plan for spending this money on some other purpose? Was this just money that was on the shelf for us that we had no purpose attached to?
My understanding, it wasn't so much local.
Perhaps this is not really a question for you because you're in the paratransit, but maybe if you don't mind, because maybe Mr.
Well, let me try, Mr. Graham. I'm not sure that when the job access reverse commute program began, it was in the bus service department. So what we had was that we had funding come in from the federal government, PRTC, and other vendors throughout the communities that provided job access type services. If they produced 50%, we provided our 50%, and the services were run. Again, as I mentioned earlier, as budgets got tight, the local communities' budgets, the matching money went away. So we had federal grant money coming in. Our government people were aggressive in trying to bring that type of availability of funding to the authority. And essentially, we just didn't have a way of expending the money. And my understanding is that we've, through legislative actions, have received approval to use past funds that have accumulated over the last few years to apply towards the use for Metro Access. We try to either improve the service or subsidize the service. And Carol, am I correct?
Yes.
Pretty much. So we have this opportunity. It's not money that we can necessarily use for anything else. But we were able to get it to be approved for Metro Access because we know that it's an always increasing cost to the authority and for subsidy purposes. We've heard the community on all of these items and think that this is a significant laundry list of things that I think are all in response to things that we're hearing in the community. And so that is the source of the funding. If I could just mention, Mr. Graham, also when the two items that are sensitive to me are the vehicles, buying new vehicles. I'd have to say that in recent discussions and looking at other bus vehicles with our transportation department, we have found some used vehicles that we think are potentially available for this service that would cost us considerably less and save us some money. We'd like to be able to explore that as part of this process if it's approved. And the second one, being sensitive to Mrs. Mack and our discussions yesterday about bus service, this zone transfers is something I think we'd have to take a very long and hard look at. We know that people don't want to transfer. I think we have to look at the cost of that and the service that is provided. So I see that as a rather extensive review as we do with the bus service and as we've recently heard from the community.
Well, let me just clarify, going back to my line of questioning. So we have federal approval to use the $6.1 million for this purpose? Is that what you just said?
For paratransit specifically.
It's for paratransit specifically. I mean, it's just, how long has this, is this money in our accounts today?
I believe it is, yes.
Yes, yes.
Why are you looking at the lawyer? Is this money in Metro Lomato accounts? And so, I mean, this is a little puzzling for me, and that's why I want to pursue this. I mean, is this a chunk of money, $6.1 million, which was just sitting there with no attached purpose, no action by this board in terms of budgeting it? Is this just free and clear of all prior obligations? Is that what we're saying?
Yes.
Do we have more money like this?
No.
Thank you. First, I want to say that I will not be voting on this item because the agency that I work for has a transportation program, a very significant transportation program, and some of the proposals here might be of interest to my agency, and so we might want to participate. But I want to add,
Are you recusing yourself? Because if you're going to recuse yourself, it should be a recusal not only from the vote but from the discussion.
Okay.
To be quite frank.
Well, that's
because
fine.
I think that if you see yourself as having a potential conflict, you should not participate.
Fine, but
then you should participate. It should be a full participation. I don't think correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sensitive to these issues because they come up for me on only rare occasion, but they do come up.
Well, that's fine, but in part of, I will recuse myself, but in part of that recusal, I'd like to give you an explanation for why the money is sitting there.
I could handle that.
Is that acceptable?
I said I could handle that to help you clarify your recusal.
Yeah, right.
I could do that.
Okay.
He can do it.
You can do it?
He says he can do it so you can remain recused.
Well, okay, but he can't do it in the... May I do it myself, and then he can add?
You can have the entire floor. I was just trying to help clarify the recusal.
Okay, well, the thing I wanted to add is that one of the issues around this money is that a 50% match is required in the program as it was designed, and local agencies, in an effort to help to meet this objective, found it extraordinarily difficult to come up with a 50% match. So that was an impediment to the funds being used in the community. My agency had attempted to enter into an agreement before and found that an obstacle.
So right. Well, that was actually my second question. And if I could be permitted just to finish my questioning, because the balance of this paragraph says the required federal match can be met by state and local contribution from compact members. Implicit in this is the notion that 6.1 million, is it a full match? Is it a 100% match?
Well, the match is implicit in what we're already spending on Metro Access.
Okay, so we're using current spending to say we have matched that.
Yes.
Okay, all right, so that helps me. Mr. Linton, did you wish to say something?
I was going to actually say what Mrs. Mack said. Since I started the program, the JARC funds was meant to have 50% local match, and there have been entities which have had difficulty making that match. So I assume what happened was the money was funded several years ago. The match was not made. We went to Congress so that if money, federal dollars, are usually have a 3-year sunset, if they're not utilized, the Congress will take it back. So I soon went to the Congress and said that, can we apply this money to use it for other things at Metro? And they therefore designated the paratransit. And therefore, we could use our existing services to meet the 50% match. So we got language from the Congress that enabled us to do that. That's generally how this works. So it's not found money. It's money that would have been rescinded, in essence, and going back to the federal budget if we didn't find a way of giving Congress language that will allow it to be applied to our existing service. So I'm assuming that's what's done.
So in other words, we have a congressional enactment here which says that these monies previously earmarked for other purposes can be used for paratransit. Is that correct?
Yes.
That is correct. Okay. And so just out of curiosity, how long have we had this money in our accounts?
It was here when I got here a year ago, and I don't know how long it's been there. I can get for you, I think in the summer 4 months ago or so, we brought a report to the board about how the money had accumulated, what the balance was and stuff. I could I could make that available if that would be helpful.
Okay, and so when did Congress act to permit this this particular use?
2-3 years ago.
Oh, fine. All right. So that's helpful information. And this is, finally, let me just ask, this is one-time expenditure.
Yes.
Okay. So further discussion, Mr. Deegan?
Yes. Could you explain why we want to waive the productivity requirement through June of 2007?
The way that without the alternatives of community transportation, without revamping the scheduling process, there's no way that they're going to achieve it. We have had discussions with MV to double the scheduling staff to bring in, to keep the folks they have and bring in a whole new set to look at scheduling in a more analytical fashion. For example, for subscriptions to be offered when they can be grouped together efficiently on a vehicle, not as it had been on a first request, first served basis. To attach these to, it's very similar to, it's somewhat similar actually to fixed route scheduling, is how it, I've done it before. And we've shared that with MV, they understand the philosophy. It's gonna take a while to hire people to do it. And it'll take a while to implement it.
So what you're saying, they're not meeting the productivity requirement now?
No, they're at 1.1 per revenue hour. Should be 1.25.
And we're going to waive that till the middle of next year?
We're going to waive it, but we're also, together, we're going to work to enable them to meet and exceed.
Okay. Do they get bonuses for meeting the productivity requirement?
They get bonus for exceeding it. Meeting it, no.
Okay. How about for not meeting, are they penalized?
We've waived the penalties that they would have accrued in exchange for their ramping up staffing, creating a critical trip management team to make sure that, to reduce the number of egregiously late rides or missed trips. They have ramped up the staffing from the original proposal on that.
And whose authority do we get to waive these? The board doesn't take a stand on that?
That's why we're coming back.
So by our action today, we're going to waive that requirement?
Right.
Mr. Kaufman.
As colleagues know, I had the opportunity to co-chair the ad hoc committee with Mr. Jaffe, not to be confused with Mr. Jaffe. And Mr. Smith, Ms. Mack, and I spent a lot of time looking at this because, quite frankly, we as an authority tried to deliver service on the cheap that simply didn't deliver. And I would note that since we started to bring about a higher focus here, as is captured in the report, that we've seen a 6.25% ridership increase. It's consistently increasing. As we heard, though, earlier with the budget report, there are some serious questions we're going to have answered so we know what doing the right thing is going to cost. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to move this action item with a couple of amendments. The first would be that between today...
Well, let's get a motion.
Mr. Chairman. I would move the amendment with the following, the action with the following amendments. One, that between now and Tuesday,
you'll make a motion. Go ahead.
You're not technically amendments, you're making a motion.
That's what I was trying to say.
Okay.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Mr. Kaufman.
The amendments I would make would be one, that between now and Tuesday, that the questions raised by the JCC be answered in full. For those we can't provide an immediate answer, explain why. That gets so we have some time, Mr. Chairman, so we can look at it before we vote at the full board on Thursday. The second item, Mr. Chairman, for those areas where we're talking about being able to do things like buy the multi-passenger vehicles, the 19-passenger, I believe, that these commitments that we need before we proceed, that frankly we have these commitments in black and white before we buy these buses. I want to be sure that we have that marriage with the not-for-profit groups before we spend the money. I'd also like to see more clarity applied to how we're looking at the grouping of the trips, since that, as much as anything, could be the biggest saving without impacting significantly the service. So that's the motion, and then I do have some comments on the motion.
There's an amendment before us. We're going to consider all of your statement as one amendment, unless you have a problem with that.
I have no problem with that.
Okay. Is there discussion on the amendment?
I can't get
discussion on the amendment. Mr. Crawford.
I'd like to discuss. This is a positive step. It doesn't go all the way, if you will, in terms of some of the requests from the disabled community. We did work with the Transportation Planning Board. I want to publicly thank particularly Wendy Concher, the staff from the TPB, the consultant support. The biggest thing we're doing here is introducing the door-to-door service as opposed to curb-to-curb. Before, there was this miraculous assumption that folks with disabilities would somehow get to the curb, and I think we found that faith-based transit wasn't working. The idea of incorporating also the additional staff to make certain the oversight is there. One of the key reasons, I think, articulated by both the disabled community and our own staff is that the oversight was not present there on the part of the contractor. We were assuming things would take place and assumptions just were not correct. This does not include the same-day taxi-type service, but again, it does address those most critical elements of getting quality service at the bar and also bringing into play door-to-door. This goes beyond the ADA service requirements, the minimum threshold. Our existing service already goes beyond that by going beyond the three-mile limit.
Three-quarter.
Is it three-quarter?
Three-quarter.
Three-quarter. Okay, I stand correct, Mr. Chairman. So I think this is a very worthwhile compromise, but again, we've got to have as tight a handle as we can on the costs, because once we start down this path, we're going to have to consistently deliver it and know what it's going to cost us both short-term and long-term.
Well, just let me just make a clarification, because in the resolution, I direct your attention to the resolution. This is what I read, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. The nub of what this funding will be provided is in the second whereas clause, and it is to establish a one-stop trip information referral and dispatching center to provide qualified low-income customers of the funding partners with transportation to and from employment sites not accessible by public transportation, and to provide reverse commuter transportation. Is this not the specific of this resolution? Just so we know what we're talking about, because
where are you? It's on page
27 of 137.
Yeah. Page 27. Yeah. The second where.
What happened to 25? Page 25.
I'm addressing the one on page.
Well, I was the approval for it. It actually, the question is still relevant. Whichever, I don't know which resolution we're on. Which resolution did you move, Mr. Kaufman?
The one found on page 25.
Oh, you're moving the 125.
So that doesn't relate to the JARC money.
But that, I don't know what that is, but, if you've moved the one on page 25, my comments are not in order.
Yeah.
Except that you should note that this is the specific declared purpose of the use of these funds on page 27, the second whereas.
Yeah. Perhaps it might be helpful, Mr. Chairman,
right,
if we ask staff for clarification on what the difference is between the two resolutions.
The second resolution on page 27 addresses spending the JARC money specifically. The first resolution addresses partnerships and door-to-door primarily.
Mr. Chairman, would it be in order for the motion to include both resolutions?
I think it would be less confusing, because we had a moment of confusion there.
As the chairman, I'd ask unanimous consent that the motion be amended to include both resolutions and Mr. Coughlin's other qualifications.
Well, okay, so now, is there objection to that?
Well, I have a question.
Pardon me?
I have a question.
Mr. Linton.
Yes. It seems to me that the second resolution relates specifically to the JARC money, and it has some language there that's consistent with what I think is called out in the federal legislation. I don't know if it's is there any disadvantage to having both of those considered jointly and amended in that way. So I would ask for counsel for some clarification on that.
There's no problem with including both resolutions. The second one has projected expenditures that are gone through in some detail on the attachment to the second resolution. The first one is dealing with the school services, but there's no, I see no prejudice in including both resolutions.
Is there objection to considering both resolutions as part of the original motion? And then, of course, we are still on the amendment. But but then let me be clear about what your
request. My request was to roll the whole thing in, if you'd rather consider.
And drop the amendment?
No, I was including the amendment in the motion, since I perceived that was Mr. Coughlin's original intention.
Right. No, that's – maybe I didn't state this correctly. That's exactly what I said, is that we would have – we would consider the motion to apply to both resolutions and the amendment to be on the table. That's okay. What – because we haven't voted on the amendment as of yet.
Further clarification.
This is, if I may say, this is especially relevant because the first resolution requiring door-to-door service, there is a funding question related to that, which some of us assumed was answered in the JARC money, and if there has to be further discussion about that issue, and we should have it in a consolidated fashion. Anyway, the clarification. Let me just restate the clarification very quickly. Is that the specifics of the JARC money are to be found in the second whereas on page 27, and this is how this board. This is what this board is considering in terms of how to spend the JARC money, and it's described in that paragraph, which I don't think includes door-to-door, but that's why we need the clarification. Am I right? This is the elucidation of how we're spending the JARC money in the second paragraph of the second resolution.
If I just ask Mr. Yaffe just to comment again, I believe that the cost of door-to-door is negligible.
Yeah, once we're into it, we need to spend some money to educate our consumers. And we need those vehicles to use that extra board capacity to ease the transition pain during the first initial weeks. After that, there's no cost.
Okay, let's continue our discussion. Now, do we wish to dispose of the amendment so we can get to the... Get to
fine.
Restate your amendment very succinctly so we can get to the heart of this discussion.
That in moving this forward to the full board, the two amendments were one between now and Tuesday to provide the board and staff with detailed answers to the questions raised by the JCC so we have full understanding of the cost implications. And second, the staff provide more clarification of how they pursue realizing the grouping of trips is a cost-saving measure.
Okay. So discussion, hearing none. All those in? Mr. Lind.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. I'm still a little confused here. In terms of the JARC resolution, does the amendments that Mr. Coughlin suggest that applies to the JARC resolution as well?
Applies to the actions.
So the actions would also affect the JARC resolution as well?
I don't think they affect either. I'm sorry, but I don't think they affect either resolution.
It affects the action that we're about to take.
And, Mr. Chairman, I did neglect to stipulate one other item. There were three. The third was is that while we're authorizing the expenditure of funds for these multi-passenger vehicle that before the expenditure be actually entered into, that we have firm commitments from those not-for-profit groups before we made the purchase.
Does everyone understand the amendment?
We restate that, sir.
That's on
the we need Gladys to sign the bottom line before we buy our bus.
That's a half a million. That's a half a million dollars for the 19.
Because one of the things, quite frankly, to try to further clarify, Mr. Chairman, since I evidently haven't applied the clarity, is that right now we're making multiple trips to different nonprofit groups for folks basically being picked up at the same place and often going to the same place. By basically getting the larger vehicles, instead of having one, you know, fairly expensive vehicle going back and forth all the time, we can bring one moderately more, fill it with people seeking this service, and take them to that end destination. So it is while it's an expenditure, it's an expenditure being driven as a cost-saving measure. And I want to make certain that we have it in black and white before we buy those vehicles.
That's what you want to
do. Mr. Deegan.
Just one quick clarification, Mr. Requa mentioned. We are looking at maybe doing a mix of used vehicles and new vehicles.
We certainly would like to take a look at it. We found a source of used vehicles that appear to apply, and we'd like to do some more research into that. Okay. Certainly we'd try to implement that as part of the, to maximize the use of the dollars.
Yeah. There's nothing worse than buying $4 million of new vehicles that all go bad at the same time. So our predecessors will be stuck with that not a few years down the road.
Okay, is there further discussion on the amendment?
Like a fleet manager.
Further discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment is carried. Now we're back on the action. I record Mrs. Mack is recused on this entire discussion. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. We're back on the action. And now the door-to-door service, what is the relationship of the door-to-door service with the JARC money, if any?
$100,000 would be used to inform riders of how it works. If per individual lives in an apartment complex where their door is not, the building door is not visible from the street, will still have to be a curb-to-curb for those. It's also training. There's some training, not a lot, but of drivers. And there'll be some extra operating expenses during the first initial weeks of door-to-door in case our drivers, some of them run late, and we'll be happy using some of this new extra board and perhaps some additional capacity to keep on schedule. But after the initial weeks of door-to-door, we're not looking at operational impact on cost, but we expect a reduction in complaints and improvement in quality of service.
Now, this is, in my recollection of this issue, and I've been quite involved in this issue, one of the reasons that we didn't do door-to-door and that we've done curb-to-curb is because we were assured that there would be significant costs associated with the expanded service. So now you're advising us that that is not the case, and that, in fact, these costs would be, what would be the word that you would use? Minimal, insignificant?
Negligible.
In the second paragraph on page 27, the language that says to provide qualified low-income customers with transportation to and from employments, if this is one-time expenditure, what is going to happen to this expense when this funding runs out? And how much is involved in funding this particular service, which would, I assume, become a future obligation of the program itself, since there would be no additional JARC monies available, at least not this money.
12% of our rides are transporting adults with severe cognitive disabilities to day support programs, vocational programs.
Well, this is for employment. Are these people employed?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of a hyphenated type of, but yeah, they are at the sites. This is mostly in Maryland, and we have them now. They require custodial care, unlike our general ridership, in that we need to do a door-to-door. We need to hand them off from someone at the pickup site to an employee of the site at the work site, because some individuals may wander off. They may require an extra level of custodial care. We're not doing bus attendants now.
Excuse me, Mr. Jaffe.
Yes.
That's not, did you hear the question I asked? The question I asked, this is one-time funding, and yet this appears to be an ongoing obligation.
It has been.
The question is, well, how, if we're going to use JARC monies for this for a period of the time that until we exhaust those monies, how are we going to pay for this in the future?
The JARC money would be used for the vehicles. The operating costs would be diverted from what we're already spending now. The operating wouldn't be through the JARC.
Then this language needs to be modified.
Point of clarification. Both of the resolutions, the actual proposed actions are in the resolved. The second whereas clause on page 27, which I'm referring to, is a description of what the original JARC program provided as a matter of background. So in each of these resolutions, there are resolved clauses, two on page 28, and excuse me, and on page 26 there are, beginning on page 25 and going into page 26, there are a number of resolves, and those are the specific actions that the board is being asked to approve. The expenditure of funds is laid out on the attachment to the second resolution in a tabular format. So you can go through and see all the proposed expenditures of funds.
Okay, so in that case then there's $540,000 for staff for one time only?
We're going to see if especially by saving money by buying some used vehicles, we're going to try to use that through FY08.
Well, I don't know how others are feeling. I just want to be assured, thank you very much, Ms. O'Keefe, but I just want to be assured that Attachment A is compliant with the one-time nature of this expenditure. And if it isn't, then how we propose to maintain this program beyond the life of the JARC money. Mr. Linton.
Let me ask, clarify that point a little bit more, Mr. Graham. Aren't some of these services that you're talking about providing services we're already providing?
We're already providing at greater expense.
So we're already providing these services, so to suggest that we're not starting new services that will then have to be sustained after the JARC money is no longer available. We are providing services now to these individuals, and we will be able to utilize some of this JARC service to both do some education, to provide, to purchase vehicles, and some degree, hopefully, make this current service that we're providing more efficient long-term after this JARC money disappears. But we're not expanding services that will then have to be captured somewhere else in the budget after this JARC money is no longer available.
We need to do what we're doing more efficiently, exactly. And hopefully in the eligibility process we can encourage people to use services that are most appropriate for their mobility needs.
Mr. Chairman, just one clarification. There are additional staff requested, and I've requested of Mr. Yaffe that the funding available for this program carry us through 07 and 08 so that we don't come right back to you next month with a budget request to fund the additional people for 08. So we're looking at to include the funding for the additional six staff members through at least through 08. So that might be an additional expense in 09.
Well, I just, as one member of this board, I am very uneasy using one-time funds to commit ourselves to long-term obligations. I think that's fundamentally a principle that has to be looked at with great concern. And I'm having a hard time reconciling what you're saying, and you weren't here when we had these other discussions, reconciling what you say about door-to-door services with what has previously been told us about this. And I'm seeing long-term commitments being made here with one-time funding, and it makes me very uneasy. Mr. Kaufman?
At the budget level, I have to agree. And that's one element of us, the discussion we have to engage in as policymakers. That's why, as the first of my amendments that we did embrace, it was let's be up front, let's go into this with our eyes wide open.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is if we're going to respond to the incredible array of concerns were brought to our attention, that were made very real and human to us of how our service simply isn't delivering, this is some one-time money that's there for us to take advantage of. And it helps get us through that first part of the commitment. But yes, this is going to be a long-term dance. And you know, once you start to dance with the bear, you keep dancing until the bear gets tired. But if we don't, then the other choice is to continue to deliver subpar service, to continue to be leaving people stranded, and to continue to assume that somehow people are going to be able to get to the curb as opposed to realizing door-to-door service. We have to make this investment or we can't change the service.
If I may, I would hope that through improved efficiency, we would be able to reduce the growth. I can't promise reduce operating, but at least reduce the growth in operating costs to more than cover in FY09 these personnel expenditures.
Mr. Solomon. Just one comment. As a policy issue, we have to get this right. And when the issue of paratransit contracts came to us a while ago, we sat at this table and people told us that curb to curb was okay, would satisfy all of our requirements, and was cheaper. So we select a less expensive. We selected a contractor based on those recommendations because one, we would save a lot of money, and two, the service that we were given would be sufficient. Now we're hearing that door-to-door is better, and I'm not objecting to that. I think that's right. But how now can we reconcile the other aspect of that, that is less expensive? I mean, we rejected proposals that had curb door-to-door service in them as more expensive than this contract on a curb-to-curb basis, but now we're saying we can do door-to-door without any price increase. That just, to me, is very confusing. So when we do these contracts in the future, I hope the recommendation will look at all aspects and then give us some information that we can make good decisions on.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Linton.
I think we need to clarify. We did not reject proposals. We set out an RFP that laid out the grounds for participating that was based on curb-to-curb. So it wasn't in the course of examining proposals that we rejected proposals that were door-to-door. And I think that's a very important clarification that we need to make. And number two, I also think that it's important, and I think Mr. Kaufman raised this, that many systems have gone to curb to curb. Many systems have gone to comply with what they think is the minimum requirement of ADA, because they have been looking at the cost implications. And we have tried to respond to a constituency that has made a tremendous amount of demands, and we have gone beyond what's required. There will be long-term cost implications for that as well. So as we go down that slippery slope, somewhat to the extent that Mr. Graham's concern is, irrespective of the JARC money, we're opening up some financial issues down the road because the growth is still going on. In terms of ridership, I think Steve started with that. And that's going to continue. And as we continue to provide, which is kind of premium service over and above what's required, we're also continuing to increase our costs. And you also understand that when the folks in this region have talked about long-term funding for Metro, they have not approached the paratransit service. They walled that off. So, you know, we can do all this today and talk about this in the future, but I think you need to understand what the long-term implications are.
Right, and that's precisely the point that I'm making. I understand that what we're trying to do here, and I fully appreciate and I'm very sensitive to the needs of the disabled community, But I just want to know what it's going to cost. And you know, our whole movement around paratransit has been motivated by humanitarian considerations, and I want to continue that. But maybe I can get a little bit more comfort if I may be permitted to make a further amendment, since we've disposed of Mr. Coughlin's amendment. I would like to see an analysis of comparing the cost of the curb-to-curb to the door-to-door, particularly taking into account the information that we have been previously given on this subject when we had very lengthy discussions about this issue. And I'd like to at least go into this with our eyes wide open. As to, now, you say it's negligible. Yeah, on page 29, I think you mentioned $100,000. On page 29, this is at $255,000.
The other $155,000 is operating during the first few months. That's going with being conservative in case we're running late and other issues and have to send in extra vehicles.
But if in fact, Mr. Yaffe, this is negligible, I just want to be told that it's negligible in a more analytical form.
It's been done. I'll be glad to.
We'll provide that.
We'll provide that. It's already been prepared.
Let me have the assurance of my amendment that I will move to amend this action. It's been moved and seconded so that prior to any action by the board, we would have this analysis so we can see it.
That'll be by Tuesday.
Is there further discussion on the amendment? Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. We will note for the record that Mrs. Mack did not recuse herself from that amendment and from this action in its totality. Is there further discussion? We're now on the action itself. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. This action is approved.
Yes,
thank you. Okay. Now, we'll return to our agenda. We'll return to our agenda.
I think item 4B, Mr. Chairman.
To item 4B, which is on page, we now have complete pagination because we're into great clarity now. What page is this?
I'd like to draw your attention to page 71.
Okay, if you turn to page 71.
This is a snapshot of how the fiscal 2006 capital budget end of the year. The first column is the budget itself. The approved budget was $473.7 million. This is largely an expenditure-based budget at this time. You can see the actual expenditures that were made during the year came in significantly below budget. With the infrastructure renewal program, we came in $29.3 million under budget. There were a number of delays in projects getting started. The rail car program also came in significantly under budget. Scheduling delays and delivery of the new rail cars contributed to that. We anticipate that the main issue with the kingpin has been resolved and all other issues are being resolved. We anticipate delivery of rail cars to pick up rapidly very soon. And the same thing with the bus program. There were just scheduling delays during fiscal 2006, but Mr. Reck will correct me if I'm wrong. I think the bus delivery schedule is going to get back on track.
Buses are all here, and
okay.
Payments have been processed.
This was just a look back as of June 30th where we were. So the bad news, there was some initial delays, scheduling delays, and getting projects off the ground. The good news is we didn't go into debt anywhere near to the rate that the Metro Matters program had assumed. And these projects that are called TIFIA, which are leftover projects from the old obligation-based budgeting process, are actually moving to close out faster than had been assumed. So that's kind of a snapshot of the 06 CIP. Nothing dramatic, nothing really significant there other than just to catch you up on how the year ended. The next part of this would be item 4D, which is now looking at the first quarter CIP results. I'll draw your attention to page 115. With an expenditure-based capital program, what happens now is when projects do not fully expend the amount of cash they were anticipated to spend in a given year, we're taking those year-end balances and rolling them over. If the project managers say, we are going to complete our project, it's just not happening in the year that Metro Matters said, then that cash flow expenditure is just rolled over to the next year. There's no change to the budget. This is just a change to when the bills will get paid, and that's what this page is trying to reflect. The 07 budget has a total of $679 million planned. We are taking $38 million that was not expended in 06, I'm sorry, $53 million that was not expended in 06 and rolling that in, and we're also pulling from the out years into 07 projects that think that we believe are running faster than scheduled, and the net result is we're having a revised kind of cash flow estimate of $725 million. That's a lot of mumbo-jumbo. The bottom line is the Metro Matters program is whole. There's been no change from the original plan. All of the jurisdictional contributions are being made in accordance with what was scheduled, and with some minor gives and takes of scheduling, everything's happening the way it should be.
Thank you. Discussion, Mrs. Mack?
I have a question about the rollover practice. Is there a time frame for beginning for the beginning of a project, and how long can you roll the cash over? For example, if a project is approved for 07 and it doesn't get started in 07 and you roll it over to 08,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't get started in 08, can you roll it over to 09?
Conceivably, yes. We're meeting one-on-one with the project managers and trying to find out the reasons for those things. And I guess the rail car delivery would be the classic example, as there's delays in the delivery of the rail cars and everyone understands exactly what's causing those delays. The kingpin is the classic example. We want to be able to roll those funds over year after year if needed, because the engineers are working on solutions and we think the cars are going to be delivered later rather than now. So the short answer is yes, we want to program the expenditures when the bills will be paid.
As long as you approve it, as long as the board approves the rollover.
Right. And ultimately, there's no change to the budget.
Okay. It's been my experience that there is often a reapproval required if the rollover is longer than some specified period, usually about 2 years.
We can do that. We looked at Metro Matters, and it really was silent on the subject, so we're kind of charting new territory. I'm happy to entertain that kind of a discussion.
Well,
I think it's reasonable.
I would like for you to take a look at that, because what often happens, and this has happened to us in the Metro Matters process, we've had reprogramming mm-hmm. of some of our projects because of time delays and
right.
so on. And I think we ought to be in a position to be more informed about when that's
sure,
occurred.
I agree. I mean, if
so
a project just sits year after year after year and it's
yeah.
not spending its money, the question should be raised why.
Right, and maybe want to reauthorize it for something
agree.
Different. Or
let us look at this and see if we can, you know, look at comparable capital programs and benchmark what we do versus other people and come back with a recommendation.
Okay, I would appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That really concludes my remarks. It was just a snapshot first quarter where we were.
Thank you very much. Is there being no further business to come before the committee? I just want to make one comment, if I may. This is somewhat budget-related. I attended the outreach effort on the LDBE, you know, our local disadvantaged business program yesterday. I'm a little bit, I was very pleased with the program, very pleased with the initiative, but I was a little bit concerned about comments that were made by staff that this board's policy relating to the local requirement had not been implemented. And I would just like to simply ask Mr. Requa if you would give me an update, since I was the author of that policy. I'm very concerned to hear that something that we passed 2 years ago had not been implemented. That may not be the case, but that's what staff were saying to the LDBE participants in the outreach effort.
Let me get back to you with
okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, may I ask a question of Mr. Record? This doesn't relate to this committee per se, but I'd be curious if you have any comment on the meeting of the RAC last evening on the budget, on the bus issues. for the district. Is there any kind of summary statement you'd like to make on that?
Gladys, I did not get a comment from Vince Jackson, attended that meeting. I know discussed the issues that we had discussed in the afternoon on ridership, but I do not have a comment back from the staff as how that went. But I certainly will try to get that to you before you leave today.
Okay.
To clarify, I mean, our discussions is that we've heard the public on changes in service. The 30 route is a very high ridership route. It's been a problem for years. And the solutions, we've tried to come up with solutions to make the service more efficient. The public does not like the idea of transferring. That's why I mentioned the comment on paratransit. And we're going to terminate the actions to try to change the service at the first of the year. We're going to go back out to the community, try to come up with a solution. It's a difficult solution, if there is one. So I'm sure that's what was transmitted to the RAC last night, and we're certainly going to publicize very clearly that we are not going to modify the 30s at this time, and we will be coming back out to the community.
Fine. I'm glad to hear that. And just to say, this is an excellent example of how the existence of the RAC is very helpful to us, because it does give the community a formal platform place where they can take their concerns in addition to coming to us. So
we appreciate the community response in whatever form. And again, we've heard it, and so we're going to terminate the recommended changes and move forward with a better planning effort.
Great. Thank you.
And I just want to add that I very much support that action, having heard from, without the advantage of the RAC, having heard from a great many residents in Ward 7, that they're great concern about that.
That's why we want to publicize this, so we can stop the complaints from coming in and try to get moving towards a satisfactory solution, if there is one.
Thank you. Further discussion, further business before the committee. Okay, then this meeting, I move that the board meet an executive session to discuss personnel matters consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6.3. It's been moved and seconded. Discussion. Hearing none. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? No. The ayes have it. This meeting is adjourned at 11:35.